It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 22nd day of October 2019. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube machines. And that's where our longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, is awaiting your arrival. He has, being a third stage guild navigator, folded space today to become Man Cave. And alongside his trusty sidekick, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator, and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And they're not exactly having to bust their butts this evening. Early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky are waiting to greet you as well. Just pick out a screen name and a password if you're listening to the program live. Jump right in. The conversation is fine. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Named oh so many years ago when our buddy Jim was listening in to local right-wing radio, and the local right-winger who read the newspaper to everybody every morning and sent cars careening into telephone poles and light standards and such from the sheer majesty of his monotone took a call from one of the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who said, "Steve, how come it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done seed them when I was down in the mines, and we ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which he replied stentoriously, thoroughly pleased with his own genius, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And I'm really putting way too much more emphasis and vivacity into that line. It was much more monotonous than that. But yes, that's where Titanic plates come from. And there's still no word on the location of the little Titanic strainer thingy that you use to lift things out of hot grease. Nope, that little basket thing. No word on it whatsoever. But we celebrate's the wrong word, but it's we take note of, and we lift up for other people's consumption the manifestations of Titanic intellect that are regularly to be found amongst the white wing. But before we yell full steam ahead at that there iceberg, there are thanks to be extended. We have subscribers for the 22nd day of the month. Thanks going out to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California. Thank you going out to Michael. Thanks to Jamie. And thank you to Bill. And thanks to Tirani. Thank you all very kindly indeed. And thanks for being partial sponsors of the program so that we can do a week of fundraising-free radio every month. It makes it awesome. I love it. And hopefully, the fundraising goal stands at $590 as we hope to complete fundraising in time for our Horniversary on Thursday. The 24th of October is our Horniversary, 14 years to the day from when we went live back in 2005 and well into our 16th year in total of liberal progressive broadcasting. And all and this part of it, non-commercial, non-capitalist, listener-supported, community-funded, and what a community you all are. Thank you so much. So the goal is at 590, but you may recall there's a challenge that runs through the end of this evening, courtesy of Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the sorority of Leans, a plank owner in Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. Charlene put forward a $200 challenge saying, if it is met, then she, Charlene, will kick another, she'll double it, and then kick another $100 onto it, so that $590 goes down to it goes down precipitously after that. So big thanks going out, getting the program started. Big thanks going out to Gary in New York. I had a note from Gary earlier this afternoon. It was apparently a wacky and madcap day on The View today as they invited Newt Gingrich to co-host. I didn't know Newt was, well, even relevant, but I thought women hosted The View. Suddenly Newt's getting all of the affirmative action. Has Newt gone gender fluid? But Joy Behar was out sick. Meghan McCain was off doing something entirely focused, I'm sure, on being Meghan McCain and the center of the universe. Gary has Gary said it was sort of a matter of once that started putting the hockey puck in and never taking it out because it was madcap, right-wing Titanic intellect all the way through. And so Gary says, I'd like to kick in $50 tonight, use it to meet the challenge that's on the table. So that takes us down to $75 to meet Charlene's Happy Birthday Horn challenge. $75 to go on that. And that gets us a lot closer. Thank you to Ralps jumping in. $65 we've got to go on Charlene's challenge. Thank you so much, Ralps. And what's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Yeah, hot on both streams atop the crooked deck of the USS Trumptanic. We need to lighten this thing up. Quick, throw the Kurds overboard. It's about the size of it. Thank you, Jim, for letting me know. We're getting through 5x5. Much obliged, much appreciated. So, okay, that's apparently a chat room thing. I don't know. We had good news, or at least good news for Sparky. PG&E is not going to shut off his electricity. The county south of him will likely lose power, though. Jesus. Welcome to climate change, y'all. And I've got a story. I had it yesterday, but yesterday got rather rapidly consumed. Good God, it was a 2 hour and 45 minute filibobster. I'm lucky I've got a throat or a voice. But I've got something along those lines to go into a little bit later, but it's kind of thinky. And so I don't know. Maybe, perhaps. Squeaky letting us know in the chat room that the power will probably go off probably after noon Pacific tomorrow. Jeez, I feel so sorry for y'all. I mean, I know what it's like because our antiquated, rickety, coal-fried power grid is prone to going out unplanned. And it's a real problem. So anyway, let's move toward the toward the iceberg, as it were, because there's a lot of Titanic intellect to take note of this evening. Great God in heaven. You just wake up screaming. It's horrible. Especially because of the the pure hateful vileness of the latest racist tweet from the white supremacist in chief today. Someday there will be volumes, not just one thin book, volumes written about the psychiatric and psychological pathologies of Donald J. Trump. Jesus. Let's see. On our horniversary, Jude in the Great Northwest lets us know on October 24th, she's going to be arriving in El Paso. She says, we will be standing together, dear brother. Women standing is, she's going to do a stand there at the detention centers and stand as moral witness to the immoral, unethical, brutal doings, wickedness of this misbegotten, misanthropic regime at whose head stands the greatest misanthrope ever to occupy the presidency of the United States. Hey, we've got a new Patreon patron. Thank you very kindly to Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for jumping in onto Patreon. That's really, really kind of you. I appreciate it. We all do. And so that takes us down to $55. $55 to meet Charlene's challenge. So, since we had reference to it to begin the program, and before we wander off into the general nastiness of the clannish tweet that Chlamydia Claudius engaged in, let's take a few minutes to appreciate, well, Titanic intellect from one of the greatest Titanic intellects the Republican Party has ever produced. I'm talking, of course, about Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. Shall we? As Gary suggested, you'll probably chew through an entire hockey puck on this one. Yeah, he said, I took out my hockey puck at the start of the show and never put it away. Oh, my God. And, yeah, I hope to get to New York again soon. Gary said, hope to see you sometime soon in New York. I'd love to. I'd love to get back up there. And he said, my heart goes out to you and your family with all you've been through lately. Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much. Our daughter is valiantly trying to get over a brutal situation. And still trying to figure out how to get Ferg out and solve the other problems that have to... It's like a puzzle, only there aren't any corners to get where you can get a good start. It has us both, Agnes and me, sort of, well, jangled. So thanks, Gary, and thanks for jumping in on the challenge. So here it is, Newt Gingrich, co-host of The View, because I guess he's like non-binary now. I don't know. Do we refer to, and I'm not being a smart ass, but well, I guess I kind of am. Does this mean I have to refer to Newt as them and there and they? I don't know.
Wow. on vacay. Joy's out sick today, so joining us as guest co-host, please welcome former Speaker of the House. Stop that. And author of the
Notice
new book,
she laughed.
You Know Who versus China, facing America's greatest threat, Newt Gingrich. With us
you know,
before.
Why?
I've never been a co-host. I just want to promise everybody we have a great actor coming later on, Ed Norton. I'm not that kind of actor. I'm going to try to channel Joy and do what I can so she won't be too embarrassed to have me sitting here.
No one better to fill her seat today.
So let's start with this, because before we went on the air this morning, you know who in the White House continued his rant against impeachment hearings, but he's not calling it a witch hunt anymore. He's tweeted, all Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching. Well, it's a word that nobody, you know, wants to hear. This was not a good choice of words for him, do you think?
Well, it's exactly the same term that Clarence Thomas used when he said he was guilty of a white-collar lynching.
No, it was not a white-collar lynching, Newt, you fucking idiot. Well, 16 minutes into the program and the first F-bomb's down. It was called a high-tech lynching, I do believe. And at least there was a... And of course it wasn't. Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas only happened to resent the fact that he had been caught and called out for being the serial sexual predator that he is. God, that's so 1980s, though. I mean, Jesus. Now we've got two credibly accused sexual predators on the Supreme Court bench. No surprise that they're both Republicans, but you know, you'll have that. But at least Clarence had the right melanin content, to use the word. I tell you, when I first saw this morning, it nauseated me. It made me feel physically ill. It made me sick. More than the mad ramblings and incoherent ravings of Donald J. Trump ordinarily do with me. Way more. Apparently it had a similar effect on Flavio up in La Crosse. Titanic intellects / lynching. Nectarine Nero keeps going lower and lower. He's plumbing depths as deep as the Marianas Trench. And soon, we'll need a fucking bath escape to find him. Well, if he should happen to disappear, let's just not look. Can we agree on that? But, no. Because when I hear that word, I have the memory of the images that I've seen over the years of what a lynching really is. And I'm not trying to trigger anybody. I don't want to. That's not my goal. If this is too hard to listen to, then I will not be offended if you sort of click away for a few minutes. And I very nearly tweeted a picture of what the white people did to Emmett Till in response to what Donald Trump said. But then I realized it could be taken the wrong way, and the next thing you know, I might be getting a visit from the humorless people who walk around in black suits and skinny black ties, and it, you know. So I thought better of it. But when you know what real lynching is, and when you know how many thousands of times it has been done in this country, and when you know it hasn't been done to white folks, it was reserved for people perceived to not be participating in whiteness, By that, I mean African-American people, Jewish people, Hispanic people, Native Americans, but primarily African-American people. And when you know how hateful it was, not just a murder, but a murder, a torture, mutilation, and done in so many instances as social event. Postcards and picnic baskets. It is as dark and vile a mark on our history as anything we have, and worse than many. And Newt Gingrich, a serial adulterer, who at the same time that he was delivering jeremiads against Bill Clinton's marital infidelity, was banging Callista like a cheap Chinese gong while she was his intern and he was still married to his second wife. And somehow or another, neither of them managed to burst into flames when they were presented at the Sea of St. Peter, because Newt's third wife, the one he was adulterating and forniculating with, is now the ambassador to the Sea of St. Peter. Yeah. No kidding. And he has the nerve to mount something resembling a defense of Donald Trump. I got, you know what? I need to count my blessings where I can find them. I'm glad, in a way, that Meghan McCain was off McCaining. Because it would have immediately, we'd be running a clip right now about where Meghan McCain declared that it was all about her, and that she knew what a lynching was like because she's the daughter of John McCain. So maybe it was just as well. But back to the Newt and Leroy Gingrich's excuse-making, his apologia.
Well, it's a word that nobody, you know, wants to hear. This was not a good choice of words for him, do you think?
Well, it's exactly the same term that Clarence Thomas used when he said he was guilty of a white-collar lynching.
Right, but right then?
Oh, I think it was right then, sure. Mm. I mean, I think, you know, look, put yourself, and this is really a big leap, but put yourself for a second in Trump's shoes, okay? You got beaten up for over 2 years.
That is a big leap.
You got beaten up for over 2 years with the Mueller thing. You start to relax. All of a sudden, there's this whole new wave of things. And I think part of what you have is a guy here who's just really deeply frustrated that no matter where he turns, you know, the fight keeps going on.
But doesn't he bring a lot of this on himself?
Sure.
Can't you look in the mirror and say,
he's frustrated, so therefore he gets to declare that his frustration is the identical exact same thing as being beaten beyond recognition, castrated, hanged, wrapped in a cotton gin fan, and thrown in a river. That's exactly the very same thing that is happening to Donald J. Trump. The exact same thing. Oh, it's because he's frustrated. Yeah, frustrate this, Newt. You irrelevant sack of dung.
I am very much... I much more than you all, I think he's actually an important historic figure. But I do think there are things he does that make it all harder. And I think that, you know, at times I think that had he been, if he were more disciplined, he would actually have a much easier road than he does, because he sort of chews up his own road as he goes down it.
It seems like he enjoys it, though. Like, it's a game for him. He, like, I think about the G7 summit hosting.
Abby Huntsman, honey. Oops, sorry. I canceled the honey. Abby Huntsman. He comes out of professional wrestling. Not reality TV, professional wrestling. He's running all this like a professional wrestling business. Just so we're all understanding here. It's not an accident. That much of it is it's his M.O.
It at his Doral resort. In his mind, do you think it's a game to piss off the media, to piss off Democrats?
Yeah.
Or does he genuinely see a problem?
No, he doesn't have anything better to do. Isn't there stuff we needed? Listen, Newt, you and I have known each other a long time. And when a giant 6-foot white guy says, I'm being lynched here, you understand why it's a little... bit like, listen, man, you're not being lynched here. You are being held to the standard that we're supposed to be holding every president. So I don't understand. Like, does it not bother you when he says the fake constitution? What did he call it?
He's called it a
phony emoluments clause.
Which is in the Constitution.
I mean, that... We can disagree. I've never questioned your commitment to America, whether I agreed with it or not. But you've never pooped on the Constitution, as far as I can recall.
Except for, like, his entire career. Because Newt's entire career, and in fact the entire modus operandi of the entire Republican Party, is a wholesale, to use Whoopi's term, pooping on the Constitution. I'm glad I brought up George W. Bush last night, and it's just a goddamn piece of paper, the Constitution. And that the public debt is just a bunch of useless, worthless IOUs in a file cabinet drawer. And Newt's been right there all along for all of it. So to that extent, Whoopi may be forgetting a little something.
No, I think it's very important. But look, okay, well, again, you won't agree, but you have Steve Scheff as chairman of a committee.
Wait, I know you're going to go to Steve, but I'm asking you about this.
I mean, you've asked me to explain Trump.
I know. You don't have to explain him to me.
Yeah. Okay. I think she's asking in particular, you have a white man using the term lynching. You mentioned Clarence Thomas.
Well,
by my last count, he's a black man using it.
Yeah,
I don't think he should have used it there either.
Right.
But
okay,
this is racially charged language.
Incorrect. I'm going to be very politically incorrect. Most of the early American movies on lynching were about lynching white people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the largest lynchings in the 19th century was Italians.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there is a tradition here. It's not an automatically
right. But
only
90%.
The problem is, and Newt doesn't know this, the Italians who were lynched were deemed non-white. In the 1830s, 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, Irish immigrants were portrayed in newspapers and periodicals in this country as apes. Again, not white. Jews subjected to similar or identical treatment, again, were deemed not white. Whiteness, you see, is a sliding scale. And that's how it ever has been. So even if you find statistics that say a lot of white people were lynched, those people at that time, and there's no asterisk to tell you this, you have to actually do the work, learn the history, the people that we now look back at and say, well, white people were lynched too, the vast majority of them were deemed not to be white. That's just history. Whiteness is something that has been granted over the years. And I think I've mentioned in the past as a little kid reading the Hardy Boys series. And that series began, I think, in 1927. And the Hardy Boys had a friend. They had a couple of friends. I think there was one named Chet or something. But they had another friend who was of some sort of Mediterranean extraction, Italian, Greek, I think Italian. And every other reference to him in that, and these are juvenile novels for, you know, mostly young boys. And they referred to his olive skin. Their olive-skinned friend. And that's an indication, albeit in a strange place, of the non-whiteness. Not black, not white. So just sort of take all of that in. And bless her heart, Whoopi did a lovely job of schooling Newton Leroy Gangrene, amateur paleontologist. But it was pure madness. Newt suggests to Sonny Halston that 30 to 40 million people are coming into the United States illegally. Just for those doing the on-the-fly ciphering, 30 to 40 million people is more than the combined populations of Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador. But that's okay. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. You can just lie, because after how many decades of Fox News now, a significant portion of the populace has been trained to have no use for critical thinking or obtaining facts for themselves. Jesus, I think we were about to start talking about the emoluments clause in this Titanic clip. Let's return.
And the people sitting here, you know, it may not be a totally black experience, but we're kind of the only folks that didn't come out from under the experience that was put on us, as you well know. Italian folks have, you know, were allowed and welcomed to work in ways that we were not. But my point is,
and it's unique, it's black a, experience in this country.
It's not a good.
No, it's not. Those Italians were lynched
here. It's a different
here.
Experience for black folks.
My point is. Country. It wasn't necessary for him to say that.
No, it wasn't.
You know,
no.
And so would you say that his choice of words was not smart?
I think he often uses words more clumsily than he should.
Not the question.
Well, I thought I answered you pretty directly.
No. You did a good spin. But what do you think? Do you think that's the language he should have used? Yes,
I know. I know. Look, I've been comfortable just calling it a witch hunt and a kangaroo court and things like that. I haven't gone up to that next level.
Well, you're talking about impeachment.
Yeah.
The thing that has frustrated me the most about the impeachment conversation has been the hypocrisy that you see oftentimes on both sides. But in this case, I think about you, Speaker, specifically because you were in Nancy's seat.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you did go down the impeachment road.
Right.
If you were Nancy today, and you had a president that did exactly what Trump did, that was a Democrat, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I'm sitting here trying to be Joy, and now you want me to be Nancy.
does that mean we've gone from binary to tertiary now? I don't know. I can't keep up. But he doesn't dare give a straight answer to this question because everybody knows what he did and what he was doing while he did it. But we're all civil and polite. They're all civil and polite there on the set, so they're not going to refer to the fact that he was banging away on Callista like a cheap gong while he was hooting about Bill Clinton getting a blowjob and lying about it. And you know, it's okay because for some of us of a certain age, we remember all that and it just goes as read. It's the millennials I worry about. It's the people who are my kid's age and a little bit older, assuming they're even watching this. Because they probably don't know what Newt was doing while he was hooting like a barn owl about a consensual act between two adults.
I can tell you is this is going to be a pretty heavy load to carry psychologically. Look, there are two big differences. The first is we had a report from an independent counsel that said on 11 counts, Bill Clinton was used the word guilty, including perjury, which is a felony. So we were faced with a report. I think had Speaker Pelosi referred the Ukrainian phone call to a special counsel, they could do a lot of things. Second.
Yeah, one of them isn't do anything because he's credibly accused of multiple counts of obstruction of justice, but Bob Mueller was right out of the gate saying he had no intention whatsoever of doing anything about it or charging the president with anything because he said he was foreclosed from doing that. And so he determined right out of the gate that he would not, absolutely would not, even try to answer the question. So Nancy should have appointed a special prosecutor. Congress can do Congress's job, especially when others will not. Newt had a special prosecutor statute that he could deal with. Nancy did not. God almighty.
We actually sent Congressman Jim Rogan to New Jersey to interview Chairman Peter Rodino, who had done the Watergate investigation. And Rodino had a set of rules that were very bipartisan. And we brought him back and we implemented exactly what Rodino did. So, for example, today, the White House doesn't have a lawyer in these hearings. Secretary Pompeo has staff going into a hearing, has no lawyer there, has no idea what they're saying.
But it sounds like you...
Because those are the same rules that were in place when the Republicans were doing the same thing. But it's their ox getting gored now, so the tears are great and alligator. And the weeping and the wailing and the gnashing of teeth, it goes on forever. Oh, and I need to extend thanks to our subscriber, Sharon. Hers didn't show up earlier today, but it just popped in. So thank you, Sharon, as well. Suggestion for Whoopi coming from Flavio. Hey, Whoopi, why not invite David Duke on The View as a guest host next time? Ratings will go through the roof. Ha, 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 LOL. Maybe Moscow Mitch? Yeah, see, but the problem is that's not Whoopi's call. Doesn't work that way. Those are powers considerably above her pay grade. But I get your point. Olive-skinned friend. Steve in New York says, reminds me of a cartoon, Johnny Quest, I used to love as a kid. One of the characters' names was Haji. Oh, yeah, and Bandit, and Race Bannon. Of course, there was a guy in the Trump White House for a while we referred to as racist Bannon. You know, Steve. Other Steve. Yeah, right. Steve in New York, regarding Newt. I worked on Capitol Hill during this time. I remember firsthand the nasty Christo-fascist atmosphere on the Hill that this adulterous slug fostered. Oh, and he did. As long as he was keeping his trotters in the trough and could work to get the back ones in there, too, he'd roll around with anybody. Remember Jack Abramoff? Didn't even know you could do that to Abram. Yeah, in prison. Then there's Ralph Reed. Ralph Reed's still out there running around hooting about Jesus and making a mockery of whatever dignity Christianity has remaining to it. Lady B with a note. My sister was watching her DVR recording of The View a couple of hours ago. Seeing Gingrich on there set me off like a lunatic. How dare he? Worse yet, how dare the producers of The View do this? Gingrich is the reason why we're in this goddamn mess to begin with, and they let him co-host? As if his fucking input is going to somehow enlighten us about this situation and make things better? I was raised in the church, Bob. Well, so was I, Lady B. Dipped in the water, eating the wafers. Ditto that me. I've also read a lot of alternative shit, and I've tried to open my mind to the possibility that there really may not be a God, that religion really is a human construct that helps us cope. But I swear when I see him living his retirement out in comfort, when I see Newt's adulterous third wife hold a position in power and diplomatic relations with the Vatican, I am filled with fury. There better be a God, Lady B says. Because if this motherfucker will never see any punishment for the way he wrecked this country, then this country deserves to burn to the ground. I know. And that's, you know, I prefer to see punishments worked out here in the temporal realm rather than counting on some invisible sky spook to get it right. Great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky passing out smitings and whatnot. Jack in Shreveport says, on Newt saying Clinton committed a felony when committing perjury, doesn't perjury have to be about a statement material to the case? How was lying about what degree oral versus more of sex he had with Monica Lewinsky material? Well, it really wasn't. And it wasn't a felony. It wasn't classifiable as a felony. He would have been chargeable upon his exit from office. He wasn't. It has to be material. You're absolutely right, Jack. James in Illinois says, Whoopi and Newt, she's just trying and giving him the benefit of the doubt to co-opt him into the us against the Don category of citizens. Yeah, but Newt has been a cheerleader. He hasn't been all never Trumpy. I know, it's still breathtaking, isn't it? David in South Carolina stances, you mean that The View couldn't find anyone else in the entire world to co-host? Apparently. Never pooped on the Constitution, says Flavio. Are you fucking kidding me, Whoopi? And David observing, yet Newt acts as if Mueller found nothing, when in fact Barr shut it down early and fired Mueller on orders from DT. Plenty of evidence of collusion, obstruction, and other in an aborted investigation. Mueller thought a departmental memo took precedence over the U.S. Constitution and law, which sadly it does within the executive branch, that OLC guidance. And Jim, meanwhile, merely referring to Newt as Gingrich? That pissant. Go away. Yeah. No, there's not much left. Let's get it out of the way.
would do similar to what Nancy's doing.
No, because what she's doing, A, she has no referral that says he's guilty of anything. B, she's not following
he's
rules that are fair.
I mean,
she has no rules here which are fair, which allow the person being accused to face their accuser.
Would you admit that it's an abuse of power?
Shut up, Newt. Face his accusers. He walked out and faced television cameras and confessed. I mean, there is that, right? They set out Hogan Gidley today to try to tamp down the backlash over his you know, I talk about him pogo sticking up onto the cross. Well, this is that. Imagine being so utterly sucked up into yourself that you actually think that Congress making inquiry into things that you did is the same thing as being beaten, tortured, mutilated, and hanged and burned. How broken must a mind be to reach that conclusion? Just you wait, says Ron in Raleigh. How about co-hosting The View today, Dick Cheney? Count Dickula. Don't even whisper that in the ear of the universe. I mean, just don't. P.S. says Lady B, I'd love to see him punished on Earth too, Bob, but I'm a minority. I know how it works. Gingrich will die comfortably, surrounded by family members and hospice staff. His wife will inherit his fortune. Streets will be named in his honor, and the earth will keep spinning, round and round and round. Oh, Jesus, there will be 3 days of hand-wringing and pearl-clutching and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth and millionaire TV news presenters and hosts will don sackcloth and ashes and talk about what a patriot Newt Gingrich was. While some of us will be chugging water for all we're worth, waiting for an opportunity to piss on his grave. But hell, Henry Kissinger won't even go away. Yeah, and of course, that's the real reason he's there. Jack pointing out, didn't he have a book to pimp? Maybe there was some PR company setting shit up for that. Oh, yeah. Make no mistake, it had to be pitched. Hogan Gidley explaining what Donald Trump meant when he said he was being lynched.
That is an awesome umbrella. Is that your umbrella?
Yep.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's what the press talks about while they're waiting for the guy to step up to the microphone.
Lynching is a very loaded term.
Hold on 1 second. I'm going to move everything up. Hold on. Y'all got a lot of stuff going on here, guys. Okay.
First question, Logan, if we can. Do you understand why the president could not possibly be a victim of a lynching?
I'm sorry?
Do you understand why the president couldn't possibly be the victim of a lynching?
Yeah, but the president's not comparing what happened to him with one of our darkest moments in American history.
He's just not.
What he's explaining clearly is the way he's been treated by the media since he announced for president. The word impeached...
That's not true.
That didn't go over well. Did you catch that? That's not true. You know, I know it's not true, and you know it's not true. It's exactly what he did. If he's speaking clearly, why is Hogan Gidley out there explaining? People who have spoken clearly don't need to be explained.
The word impeachment was used about this president the day he was elected and before he was even sworn into office. Let's not talk about that. And I understand that there are many people in the media who don't agree with his language, but he has used.
No, it's not people in the media who don't agree with his language. Hogan. It is people of morals, people of conscience, who not only disagree with him describing himself as being lynched, but are sickened, nauseated, disgusted by it. Yeah, Tracy pointing out, hey, let's not forget the powers that be at ABC put Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars. Oh, no, let's don't. Ron picking up on what I said a couple of minutes ago. Just you wait. How about all the tears and hagiography when Henry Kissinger finally goes on to his long dirt nap? By the way, how old is that sumbitch? He's way up in his 90s. Or he's up in his 90s. Evil is a preservative. Here's a test. Here's a test about what Donald Trump meant. And I'm not doing it. I'm not suggesting it for it. No. But if, for instance, if Lynch Trump were to appear as a hashtag on, say, Twitter, how long would it be before that hashtag was forbidden by Jack from trending? How long do you think? Can science even measure a period of time that tiny? Let's see. Trending. United States. Make a Dog's Day. Bill Taylor. Grandma Wimmy. Quandre Diggs. Emmanuel Sanders. Crowder exposes YouTube. NBA tip-off. Willie Brown. National Nut Day. Hashtag lynching. And you, dear citizen, are forbidden from using the same sorts of eliminationist language that the President of the United States uses, because you, dear citizen, do not have as much in the way of First Amendment rights as Donald Trump does. But Hogan Gidley says, oh, that's not what lynching means.
Many words to describe the way he has been relentlessly attacked, and 93% of the news coverage against him is negative. Let's talk about what the president's actually done for the African-American community. Yes.
Oh, Jesus. Dude, Jesus Dill Harris. Let's talk about what the president has done for the African-American community. Let's talk about when he called Colin Kaepernick a son of a bitch. Let's talk about what he did when he was John Kelly were sliming and attacking the South Florida congresswoman who spoke up for a dead soldier. Let's talk about how what Trump's done for the African American community by sleazing all over Maxine Waters. Yeah, I have a feeling we could go for a while.
Can you say the history of that word?
Yes.
Will you condemn lynchings?
Again, the president was clearly articulating the way.
No, he wasn't. Nothing clear about it.
He feels about the way you guys have been treating him from day one. If you want to talk about what the president has actually done for the African American community, I'd love to have that conversation, because there are many things he has done. Impeachment in this particular instance, he is receiving no due process, as many of you know. Every single one of you.
That's bullshit. That's a lie. He'll have due process coming out his orange ass if they ever actually do impeach him. But you know what? You know what? You know what? If impeachment is, or maybe roughly analogized to an indictment, because that's what a bill of impeachment is closest to. It's a charging document of sorts. You know what the defendant doesn't get to do where an indictment is concerned? Yeah, see, the guy who committed the crime doesn't get to go into the grand jury room and harangue the grand jury and call them names and threaten them. And that's what the Trump these maggots are wanting to do. They want to intimidate witnesses. They want to threaten members of Congress. They want to haul out the maggots in a white, and I do mean white, hot fury against anyone who criticizes the God Emperor. Due process.
Your reports start with behind closed doors, comma. He is not receiving due process. We all are aware of the situation in which Democrats are taking him behind closed doors, releasing selective things, not in context, trying to attack and destroy this president.
Anytime a Republican starts complaining about context, that's a sure sign, yeah, that they've been busted. Because taken out of context is a Republican's favorite whine. When you can provide context all day long, and it doesn't help them.
The fact is he has been relentlessly attacked by the mainstream media since before he took office. That's what the
relentlessly attacked in Hogan Gidley's thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and otherwise pass for brains. Relentlessly attacked is reporting actual things he's said and done. That's what relentlessly attacked means. Jesus, I can hardly believe that it's going to be 3 years come January 20th. It feels like 300 years ago when he began this misbegotten presidency by telling lies about the size of his crowd at his inauguration and gave a speech about American carnage. In regard to lynching, Steve in New York says, no matter how anyone has treated this orange fuckwit, never, ever is it lynching or anything at fucking all like lynching. No. Until such time as there are photographs of Donald Trump in which he looks like Emmett Till did, there will have been no lynching. And that is the entire point. Not yelling at you, Steve. But we need to understand that this is a function not of just his ignorance, not just of his malignancy, his malevolence, but it's also a function of his privilege. Anytime he doesn't get everything and anything he wants, it is some sort of human rights monstrosity. And if that wasn't enough, well, there's Precious Lindsay. Because Hogan Gidley goes on for another great jumping Jesus 7 minutes with that bullshit. But somebody thought it was a good idea to ask Precious Lindsay what he thought of the lynching comment, seeing as how Lindsay comes from South Carolina, where that was rather done on a rather frequent basis. Because, see, Lindsay has no self-respect. He's got there's he's a hollow man now, if he ever wasn't. But Alex Bolton over at The Hill reported that Lindsay said, and this is a quote, "This is a lynching in every sense." Oh, it's not a lynching in any sense. It's not even in the same universe. How dare he? Well, we know how dare he. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Burgess Everett over at Politico caught up with Texas Senator Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Rafaelito jumped in with both feet, too. "The connotation the president is carrying forward is a political mob seeking an outcome regardless of facts, and that, I think, is an objectively true description of what is happening in the House right now." So, the Congress doing a job that the Constitution gives the Congress to do is, according to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, a mob action. Good on Susan Rice, though. David in South Carolina, Stan, sharing this with me. Say what you will about her, but she's not mincing words. And she said flat out, Lindsey Graham is a piece of shit. And then Representative Al Green, well, he got right to the heart of things.
5 minutes. And still I rise, Mr. Speaker. And I rise today with a heavy heart and tears welling in my eyes. I rise. I rise because how dare the president compare lynching to impeachment? How dare he do this? Does he not know the history of lynching in this country? Does he not know that thousands of African Americans were lynched, mob violence? Does he not know that this is the equivalent of murder? How dare the president compare Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, a lawful constitutional process, to mob violence and lynching? Mr. President, do you not understand the history that you are encroaching upon? If you continue to weaponize racism and bigotry, this makes you no better than those who were screaming blood and soil. Jews will not replace us. It makes you no better than them. It makes you no better than those who burn crosses. It makes you no better than those who wear hoods and white robes.
Like his daddy.
Do you not understand what you're doing to this country? And more importantly, do we, the members of this Congress, not understand how he is denigrating and berating decency in this country? At some point, we must say enough is enough. At some point, we must move on to impeach. Mr. President, I beg that you would reconsider your thoughts. But for fear that you may not, I will say more on this tonight because I've been promised 30 minutes. And I will use these 30 minutes to talk about what you have done and to also talk about what I may do to continue this impeachment movement. You are unfit to hold this office. I yield back the balance of my time.
You are unfit to hold this office. Strong words. And, of course, Representative Green from the 9th District, basically the Houston area in Texas, big chunk of the Houston area, Representative Green was the first to find both voice and courage to introduce an impeachment resolution. And that, too, seems oh so long ago. But Trump does what Trump does because he is empowered to do it by people well beneath him. I offer you Warren Hurst, a member of the County Commission of Sevier County, Tennessee. Sevier County sits over, and it's known as the gateway to the Smoky Mountains. It sits over in the far eastern edge of Tennessee. WVLT-TV just happened to be at a county commission meeting yesterday evening in which they were taking up a resolution in which Sevier County or Sevierville, Tennessee would become, oh my God, a gun sanctuary city. And somehow or another, that led Commissioner Warren Hurst to go down another wicked, vile, nauseating, evil path.
I've got a choir around it for
You'll hear the reporter's voiceover, but the first thing you hear is Warren Hurst declaring, "We got a queer running for president." But then, far as much or more disturbing is what follows, and that is the guffaws and the belly laughs of those in attendance at the meeting, you know, to discuss the gun sanctuary city ordinance.
I got a choir around it for president.
Reaction from some in the crowd. One woman stood up, expressed her anger, and said this as she stormed out. Commissioner Hurst's comments continued, saying the white man has few rights.
I'm not a president. That by golly, a white male in this country has very few rights, and they're getting tucked more every day.
A white male in this country has very few rights, and they're getting took more away every day. And the problem is that is a that's not some fringe notion. it is a mainstream idea. Among the Republican Party. And while the reporter made mention of one woman getting up and saying this is bullshit and storming out, nobody else did. They sat there and guffawed and clapped and laughed. And to that list of people who have been lynched in the history of this country, add members of the LGBTQ community. What happened to Matthew Shepard was a lynching. That is not an inappropriate usage of the term. He was crucified on a barbed wire fence. And that would be just fine by the majority of the people clapping and laughing in that commission room in Sevierville, Tennessee.
After the meeting, Hearst told me over the phone that he's entitled to his opinion and stands by it.
Now, if you don't, your kids and your grandkids,
notice the first word, amen. That's a Christian responding to that sleaze. Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm not a big fan, Bob, but I'm pretty sure Brother Mark Sanford ain't gay. You savvy? And, of course, I guess Warren Hearst there has never seen those photos of Donald Trump swanning around with Rudy Giuliani in drag. No, of course not. That's fake news. The Tennessee Holler had the story over on Twitter. That's at the TN Holler. And they also tweeted out the phone number for the mayor's office and for Warren Hearst himself. Yeah, he should probably resign. But then if he does, well, he will immediately pogo stick up onto the cross. And yes, just in case you were wondering, and I know you were, later on Warren Hearst said, and you can predict this, I ain't racist. Some of my best friends are black. Because, of course, he did. Yeah, David, I know. David in South Carolina stand reflecting on his lovely wife who passed away back in 2015. And yet, that's America. Warren Hearst is the America that Lee Greenwood sings about when he sings God Bless the USA. Ain't that John Mellencamp? You know, not that I'm sure he did. John Mellencamp is nowhere near the same mindset, but ain't that America? See, I remember when I think it was Amy Klobuchar the other day who said, "For people like me and Mayor Pete, this isn't flyover country. this is home. This is America. Something like that. And, of course, that's a persistent trope on the right wing, that the real America is what happens when you leave the coastal areas and get into bumfuckistan. That California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, those aren't the real America. Unless, of course, they need to get themselves all wrought about, oh, 9/11, or need a reason to hate on some people who worship the invisible juvenile delinquent in the sky differently than they do. Steve takes issue. Steve in New York. I would not label what happened to Matt Shepard as lynching. I would call it a crucifixion indeed. Lynching to me suggests a systemic terrorist scheme aimed at an entire people. Well, I think what happened to Matthew Shepard was a pretty clear message to a distinct group of people, especially in that locale. But I get your point. Rusty says, I visit Cheyenne, Wyoming, and everybody knows Matthew Shepard's event was simply a robbery. Yep. Yeah, I got that. Randy in PA says, no, Bob, that's actually Merca. Point taken. Kyle, on the other hand, says, thank you for bringing up Matthew Shepard when talking about lynchings. It is painful to think about, but it means a lot that you don't overlook that the LGBTQ community was affected by lynching, too, something that history has worked to erase in so many ways. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Kyle. And, of course, probably one of, if not the most vulnerable population in the United States is the trans community. Trans women in this country are murdered almost weekly. But, of course, that can't compare with the wee little bit of discomfort that Tangerine Tiberius feels because he's actually been caught doing the filthy, unconstitutional, dishonorable shit that anybody who was paying attention knew he would commit. And, you know, Representative Green was right. He's no better than the people who put on hoods, because one of the people who put on hoods raised him. Recall, please, that the novel that Birth of a Nation was based on was simply called The Klansman. I suggest that that going forward, that be the simple reference we use. For who? Yes. Dead Fred Trump. Because he was. Trump can hoot and holler and squeal and carry on all he wants. But the fact of the matter is, the work has been done. And it's pretty solid. That, yeah, Fred Trump was arrested at a Klan riot in Jamaica, Queens in 1927. Because, among other things, he was wearing the garb. Just was. The saga of Lev and Igor won't go away. Lev and Igor, in addition to being henchmen for Rudy Giuliani, Lev and Igor were apparently also tied in with a guy named Adam Laxalt. Adam Laxalt was used to be the Attorney General of Nevada. And he has, Adam Laxalt is not exactly Simon Pure. He's a disgraced Republican, as a matter of fact. Candidate one in a federal indictment of Lev and Igor, as compared to Pete Sessions, former Representative Pete Sessions, referred to as Congressman one. Lev or Igor, can't keep them straight, gave some $10,000 to Adam Laxalt in his campaign, trying to get a pot dispensary up and running, according to reporting from the Nevada Independent. Well, and of course, now Adam Laxalt has been named one of the co-chairs of the Trump 2020 campaign committee in Nevada. Yeah, no, no surprise. I mean, are you? Because I'm not. It was a nervous day on Capitol Hill for the Trump-enabling maggots in the Republican Party. You could tell by the way that they talked about the lynching issue and the way that they talked about the impeachment issue. Jim Shorts Jordan, the guy who turned away from young men being raped at The Ohio State University, was not in the best of form. Having gone in regard to the hearing, the closed door deposition today, Jim Shorts Jordan couldn't quite bring himself to do his usual full throated endorsement and vindication of Julius Geezer. No, the only thing he talked about today was what a great job the lawyers for the Republican side did in the hearings. Because the Trump regime tried to move heaven and earth just to stop Bill Taylor from testifying today. It didn't work. His testimony has been described as incredibly damaging to the president, Bill Taylor's. And it didn't make for a nice day for Gordon Sondland either. Taylor said that Sondland actually told him that military aid to Ukraine was being held up by the White House in order to strong-arm them into doing their dirty political business for them. One person in the room said, eyebrows frozen raised, most thorough account of everything so far. And I, you know, look, I take some of these people who are interviewed with a grain of salt, but you can't entirely dismiss somebody like former U.S. Attorney David Kelly. He was interviewed on MSNBC today by Ari Melber, who actually worked for Kelly at one point in time. And they talked about Taylor's testimony. And he wasn't watching, but had he been, Nitwit Nero might have turned purple. Oh, and by the way, we're halfway through the program. We have $55 more to go. That's it. To meet Charlene's Happy Birthday Horn Challenge. $55. We got to do it by the end of the program, or the challenge fails. $55 to go, and after that, there's only 165 more, and we're done with fundraising, and everything is fundraising-free radio until the end of October, if we can get there. But first, we have to wipe out the challenge, and there's $55 more of it. But back to David Kelly, because what he said, and I don't think he's on there just to pitch a book. He's talking from his perspective as someone who has been the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, which, of course, historically is known as probably the single most independent of all the U.S. attorney offices in the United States. And like I said, if any of Team Maggot heard this, I would be a little worried if I were them.
Breaking news tonight with the fallout from these new details pouring in from today's explosive impeachment testimony from former Trump diplomat Bill Taylor, laying out these new details of an incriminating quid pro quo plot between the Trump administration and Ukraine. We've been going through the details, and here's another that we haven't aired yet. Taylor recounting how that now famous Trump loyalist, Gordon Sondland, was trying to defend the premise of this transactional foreign policy, saying that because Trump is a businessman, when he's about to sign a check to someone who owes him something, he asked that person to pay up before signing the check. I want to get into this with two prosecutors who are real experts on these kind of cases. David Kelly is a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, often in the news. And Barrett Berger is a former federal prosecutor serving in that office as well as the Eastern District. Good day to both of you.
Hello.
How are you?
David also, as I always mention, is a former boss of mine. And if we were in the U.S. attorney's office, you would be more senior in rank. We'll start with you, although I prize both of your analysis. What kind of evidence did we hear today?
Well, you heard a lot of damning evidence, both for the president and those folks around him. The question is, from a criminal perspective, what does that do? Is this really a criminal issue, or is it really an issue for, you know, constitutional issue of impeachment? So you really have a misappropriation of money that's appropriated by Congress. And if this was in the president who was directing it, I would think that you have, from a criminal perspective, you have federal election law violations, and you might even have violations of making bribes to foreign officials.
So you just listed
FCPA violations.
Well, Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Right. So you just listed off, as a prosecutor might, several felonies that could have been committed that you'd at least want to investigate.
Sure.
What does it tell you that under Bill Barr, the Justice Department's immediate public response to this was that there was nothing to investigate?
It sounds to me, and not really having all the facts, but on a glance, it certainly was enough in the whistleblower complaint to dig deeper than they apparently did. So I don't know if it was sloppiness or intentionality that they didn't pursue it further.
Spoken like a very careful attorney. He doesn't know if it
attorney.
Was sloppiness or intentional, but he's saying, and I wonder if you could build on the point, that we keep learning more information that suggests, at a minimum, there was an effort at extorting a bribe. And to the extent that foreign officials were involved, it may be also other laws. Your view.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor's testimony today, I think there's no way that Congress can't find this significant. The quote that you just put up where he was, you know, describing how Sondland was saying, you know, the businessman writing the check. I mean, if we were in front of a jury and we're trying to explain the concept of a quid pro quo, that may be the very example I would use, right, of a businessman wanting to, you know, get the payout before he signs the check. I think Taylor really went.
And let's pause on that just, and then you go.
Yeah.
The businessman writing the check is spending his money in a transaction. Here, the allegation is that the president is stealing money that's not his. It's U.S. taxpayer appropriated funds to get a personal benefit.
Right. I mean, the conduct is clearly worse than what is set out in that hypothetical. But just to exemplify that, you know, for an administration that has really gone to great lengths to say there was no quid pro right from the get-go, this was a pretty startling description of exactly that.
Yeah. And some of this news has come at us so fast today that we don't have it all ready and when we produce it up. So I have something here I want to read that I know we don't have yet. But it is also from Taylor's testimony because we're getting it as we go. He describes the first time that he heard from government officials, quote, that the money, the security assistance, was, quote, conditioned on the investigations that Trump wanted. Oh, we do have it now. Great. Let me read the whole thing. This was the first time I'd heard the security assistance, not just the White House meeting with Zelensky, was conditioned on the investigations Trump wanted. Is that good or bad?
From a criminal perspective, it's really bad because it's the quid pro quo. It's just conveying a thing of value. From a constitutional perspective, it shows an abuse of power, which is the very thing that's contemplated in the impeachment provision of the Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. One thing that really struck me with the reporting from Taylor's testimony today was how important it seemed to be that the Ukrainian president made these announcements publicly. That really speaks to me to this idea of, you know, how you say this was a thing of value. It wasn't necessarily even that the investigation was going to be conducted by the Ukraine or that they were looking into it. It seemed that the import was that this proclamation was made publicly so that it was to get sort of the full bang for the buck so that it could clearly be used as an advantage in running a political campaign.
Right. And you're suggesting that Donald Trump, whose rise to power and whose troubles have come in part from his obsession with the use and abuse of publicity was keenly, according to this allegation, was keenly interested in getting it out public and boxing in that they would do this Biden probe and say they'd do it so it would ensnare Biden before even the primaries were over.
Well, it's one fact I think that, for example, like a prosecutor could use if you were trying to show that what they were after was something of value that could be used in the context of an election. Making it very clear that this needed to be a public proclamation that they were going to be conducting this investigation would be a factor that I think would be significant in trying to draw that conclusion.
And so, let me just one thing. If this was a criminal case, we're talking in terms of a criminal case, which it likely wouldn't be. It would be really an issue for Constitution. But given the evidence.
And this is the big deal.
Lots of cases don't go to trial in a criminal case because the evidence is overwhelming or sufficient enough to have a conviction. So I doubt that this is a case that would really go to trial. When confronted with all the evidence, a reasonable defendant would likely take a plea.
You're saying someone presented with this evidence, like
it's pretty damning evidence.
Damning slam dunk evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, far be it for me to disagree with the former U.S. attorney here, but yes, it's a strong case.
Well, Mr. Kelly, who is that?
Wow. So what has to happen is he has to get run out. I mean, this is why Nixon resigned, okay? This is why he had to go. Because he was going to be convicted in the Senate. And then, well, he could be criminally prosecuted. This is how you wind up with Gerald Ford. This is why if Trump does not want to go to prison, he has to resign. But he will take it just as Nixon did. He will take it right up to the brink of the abyss, hoping for some deus ex machina to haul his ass out of the fire at the last moment. But there is a lot of criminal liability out there waiting for him if he tries to brazen it out. It will not be pretty for him. Can you dare to imagine him losing in November 2020? And then, as we have, I guess the word fantasized is okay, having the handcuffs put on him at about 1:20 or 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on January the 20th, 2021. He doesn't like anybody to tell him things he doesn't want to hear. His entire staff is becoming like the folks in the bunker. Like I said the other night, just sitting there sort of turning the pack of cigarettes over and over in their coat pockets. Because they know that sooner or later they're going to light up. Everybody is subject to his intemperate, disordered wrath. But if you're being paid a bajillion dollars an hour in some silk stocking law firm, sooner or later, a lawyer's duty is to do the work his client wants him to do within the parameters of what is legally permissible. But there's a reason that so often you'll see the phrase attorney and counselor at law. When your client comes to you and says, I want to do something, I want you to do this for me, and it's really stupid, but I'm paying you a lot of money, and so I need you to do the stupid thing, that's when the counselor at law part kicks in. And you say, well, you know, I can do that. But as counsel, I have to tell you that will be really stupid. And it is not a good idea. Somebody eventually is going to have to deliver him the bad news if they already aren't. And I think the madness that we're seeing on a daily basis is probably evidence that somebody in there is trying to tell him what the lay of the land looks like. The Wall Street Journal, you know, and remember, the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal are one thing, the actual straight reporting another. The opinion pages are just a cesspit. Remember, it was the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal from whence came Bret Stephens before he got his wingnut welfare job over at the New York Times. But street-level reporting is a little more reliable. So they've got a story. The Rupert Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal has a story about how Trump demanded that his cabinet go to a rally with him this past June, a rally in Florida. And Mick Mulvaney spoke up and said, boss, you can't do that. Employees of the executive branch cannot use their positions for political activities. It's against the law. It violates the Hatch Act. And according to the story reported by the Wall Street Journal, Geezer Disgustus responded, I'm in charge of the Hatch Act. And you're weak. You're weak. The Hatch Act is not something the president is in charge of. not by any stretch of the imagination. And it's probably why and things like that, he can't handle it. He has a weak, diseased, and disordered mind. And that's why yesterday was weirder than the day before, and today is weirder than yesterday, and tomorrow will be weirder than today. Even the lynching comment. The filthy lynching comment. Is I suspect, a product of this rage. Someone is beginning to try to tell him the truth. As Lady B points out with regard to lynching, people bought picnic lunches, brought picnic lunches to lynchings. They would bring their kids. They'd cut off the penises of black men and sell them off to the highest bidder. They'd stuff the victim's testicles in his own mouth. Fuck you, Donald Trump. May you die in dementia-addled misery. That goes double for the people who enabled you. That's not any kind of violent language. That is merely, and it's a word we were talking about last night, that is merely a hope. I might disagree a little bit. If he's demented, if he's like Reagan and doesn't even know he's in the world, that's kind of like not getting punished at all. It's sort of the polar opposite of what Carl, the assistant greenskeeper, says in Caddyshack. You know, when he was talking with the llama, big hitter, the llama. And he says, there will be no gratuity for you today, but when you die, you will have perfect consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is good. Perfect consciousness. Well aware. As I've said before, if you really want a dose of what it means to have some divine justice meted out to you, there is no better biography to look up than the life of Charles of Navarre, known to history as Charles the Bad. Lady B, look up Charles the Bad, Charles of Navarre. Tell me if that would be suitable. Scott in San Diego takes a little issue with me. Point of order, Senator Kincaid. I don't think Nixon was waiting for some development to haul his ass out of the fire.
Oh, did I hear you say Senator?
Yeah, Senator Kincaid here. Yeah, that's what Scott called me. Hi, boss.
Hi, Scott. I didn't know that he was royalty, but now...
No, Senator, not royalty.
Well, in your book, that's
there's only
royalty.
There's only one royalty in this house, and that's the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess.
I love everybody.
Until the end, Scott, until the very end, Scott says, Nixon believed he'd done nothing wrong. In fact, even after the very end, he remained firm in that belief. It's referenced in one of the interviews with David Frost, who came right out and confronted Nixon on that point. Nixon claimed innocence until the day he died. If science someday provides a way to reanimate Nixon's rotting corpse, when asked, he'll still claim he did nothing wrong. Right, because in that David Frost interview, he says, well, if the president does it, it isn't illegal. Which is just patently monstrous, anti-democratic, anti-constitutional horseshit. Oh, good. I always enjoy it when somebody gets when somebody goes there with me on a movie reference. Yeah, the llama, big hitter, hits it into a crevasse, and he says, "Gunga galunga, gunga, gunga galunga." Ball pops out. Thank you, Steve, in New York. You know, it's another one of those moments when my faith in humanity is strengthened when it's wavering. James in Illinois says, unlike Nixon, Donnie has a whole lot of state charges hanging over him, like the sword of Damocles. Wouldn't want to be him. Poor and free or rich and locked up. They'll probably take all his money anyway. And then there's the question of what constitutes all his money. There may not be much of it. Yes, you did just hear an angel's voice, Rusty. Rusty hearing Agnes. Did I just hear an angel's voice? Yes, yes, you did. And so, hey, good things have happened. Thanks to Jack in Shreveport, and thanks to Tracy. And thanks as well to Samson and to Dan. Let me add all this up. So, Charlene's Happy Birthday Horn Challenge is met. And then, if we add together Dan and Tracy and Samson, ta-da! Fundraising for the month of October is complete. And that means that we will have an extra day and an hour or so of Fundraising Free Radio. Thank you, everybody, for helping us get there. I understand, Tracy. Tracy says, I'm listening to the show intermittently because I can only take so much between Nude on the View and that fool in the White House comparison of lynching to impeachment simply turns my stomach. Tracy said, I just may have to come up with a challenge of my own. That is, if you don't mention Jesse Lee Peterson for the rest of the month. Just kidding. Do what you have to do. Well, fortunately, you don't have to do that, because we're done. We are done. Thank you so much, everybody. And thank you, Charlene, for making the challenge that got the ball rolling. Thank you so much.
I run the Hatch Act. You're weak. I'm in charge of the Hatch Act.
God, there's so much work to do. Moscow Mitch is on the run with the Bill Taylor testimony today. Moscow Mitch put some space between him and Chlamydia Claudius. Talking about impeachment, McConnell said, it is an unfair process, and a better way to characterize it is to call it an unfair process and inconsistent with the kinds of procedural safeguards that are routinely provided for people in this kind of situation, either in court, in an impeachment process in our country. Unfair. We're still trying to figure out what qualifies as unfair. He also apparently, Moscow Mitch, doesn't appreciate having words put in his mouth by a guy with Spyro Keats in his brain. You might recall that a while back, a couple of weeks back, the venereal Vespasian said that McConnell told me my call with Zelensky was perfect and it was innocent. Well, when a reporter asked McConnell about it today, McConnell said, I never spoke to the president about the call. The reporter asked him, so was Trump lying? You'd have to ask him. The wheels are getting a little wobbly, aren't they? They sure seem it. We can expect Gordon Sondland, the hotelier from the Great Northwest, whose property values are declining probably by the minute. He's probably going to have to come back and testify since Bill Taylor put the lie to him today. Somebody might get himself a little old perjury charge. You know, the kind that Newt was talking about today on The View. More from the Lev and Igor show. I forgot this one yesterday. They sure do get around. Not too long back, the current governor of Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, said, what? Lev Parnas? Igor Fruman? Never heard of the guys. I don't know them. Well, no, heck no. No knowledge whatsoever. Well, okay, I might know Lev, but only because he's a supporter of our great and glorious God Emperor Trump. And then somebody found the photo. There they are, Lev and Igor, standing next to Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, fresh on the heels of his Nazi Klan-backed victory in the Florida governor's race. Yep. Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Just another lying Republican. But then again, nobody actually thinks that Ron DeClantis has anything resembling morals or common human decency. To whoever's on the stress line, I have to apologize because I'm having trouble. I think maybe the little gizmo box that we use to bring the telephone calls into the program may have gone to its long home. I'm not sure, but if you want to get through, it's probably best to try getting through on Skype, because I'm not going to be able to bring you on air via the phone. One more thing to try to fix. So that being the case, let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Carl.
Hey, Carl. How are you?
Just a quick thing. I thought of this about probably a year or two ago. There's more ethics in the eye of a newt than in all of newt.
Nice.
Could be a bumper sticker, but I would really like to say that right to his face, because he's just the biggest piece of shit. But anyways, that's it.
Well, maybe this side of Donald Trump. I mean, we might have to disagree on that one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's true.
See what people of goodwill can accomplish when we set our minds to it.
Yes. Yes.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
All right, Carl. Good to hear from you, man.
Okay. You have a nice night.
All right.
Thank you.
Later. Bye. Bye. That's our buddy Carl calling from Western Mass. Yep. Lev and Igor are right there in a video with Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. And it turns out that, according to Politico, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, now the governor of Florida, spent the last part of his 2018 campaign hanging out with Parnas at rallies before the election. Because, you know, Lev could maybe leverage, see what I did there? Some maggot votes. Encourage some neo-Nazis and racists and maybe some Klansmen and some sweet, sweet foreign money goes a long way when you're running a racist campaign for governor as the Republican nominee in Florida. Also in the photo, former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, who took money from Trump in return for laying off charges relative to fraud university, I mean Trump University. And it's not like it was just one thing. In one day, he was seen at one rally in South Daytona. Later on the same day, he's in Boca Raton, 200 miles away. Funny how that all... What a coincidence. And the day before all of those two campaign events, there's an Instagram photo of Lev on a private jet with Rudy Giuliani. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis finally had to come clean a little bit, and he said, I knew Parnas. I didn't know the other guys much, but this was a guy who was at GOP functions, Trump victory functions. He was a lot of these things. You know, in a world where people are paying attention, showing up at a lot of Trump victory and RNC events, well, there may come a time when that becomes a chargeable criminal offense, because the whole goddamn thing has been one long-running criminal enterprise. You know? Yeah. And Precious Lindsay is getting dragged. For saying that it absolutely is a lynching in every sense. Mehdi Hassan responded, there are 4,743 people, according to the NAACP, murdered, lynched by a domestic terrorism campaign by white supremacists, and Trump uses that word to describe impeachment. I'm as disgusted as Laura, and I'm less dumbfounded because he's a racist, and when his back is up against the wall, he does racist things. Did he tweet in this way because he was nudging and winking at those white supremacists in his base who show up at his rallies? Or did he tweet in this way because he's typically impulsive, racist, and rude and crude on Twitter? It's an eternal mystery with Trump. You're never quite sure if it's one or the other or both, but Lindsey Graham is the real villain today. The Laura he speaks of is Laura Coates. And she was there to school Jake Tapper on what happened at lynchings, similar to the note that Lady B sent in a little bit ago. It's a history that that all white Americans should become deeply familiar with. Because it is as vile a part of our history as exists, perhaps. Well, next to the, how do you do a comparison? But the genocide of Native Americans and the lynching campaign against African Americans are side by side as massive, massive human rights horrors, not just violations, horrors. So here we are at the top, at the beginning of the third hour of the program. We're going to take a couple of minutes away, because now that they're back, I don't want to miss any of the green news reports. We'll check in with Brad and Desi, and then come back and maybe check in on the phone lines. That could be cool. All right. So let's see what they've got.
It's Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019.
I've said many times that I have the coolest job in the world.
Trump's totally cool Energy Secretary Rick Perry announces resignation amid impeachment scandal.
The area's needs are now expected to outpace what is actually available for the next 100 years.
Arizona County faces severe water deficit. ExxonMobil goes on trial for climate fraud in New York State. Plus,
we want the people in power to unite behind the science.
Climate strike in Canada's tar sands country packs a punch on eve of national election.
All of those punches and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Look, my daughter's 15 and she's very serious on climate change. She's following it. I think it's awesome. I think young people being not just active but engaged, I think that's great. But I think when they start walking out of class over it, they should be in school doing what they're doing to learn, right?
Right. But if they weren't walking out of school, you wouldn't be talking about it on Fox News, would you, Ed Henry? Right? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, that guy on K-Jazz in Arizona sounded pretty cool given what he was talking about.
The area's needs are now expected to outpace what is actually available for the next 100 years.
For the next 100 years. He's talking about water in Arizona.
Yes, he is, and he is a little too relaxed about that. Arizona's top water official has warned that new data show Pinal County, which includes parts of Phoenix, is facing a long-term water deficit. New updated groundwater modeling found that there is not enough water to meet all projected demands from the region's fast-growing cities, farms, industries, and planned subdivisions over coming decades.
For the next 100 years.
And worse, a different report from Arizona State University released on Monday concludes that some suburbs of Tucson and Phoenix will struggle to find enough water to continue growing without damaging underground aquifers. In Washington, former Texas governor turned Energy Secretary Rick Perry announced he will leave his position at the end of the year with a four-minute video celebrating the department that he once said he would abolish when he ran for president. Perry tried but failed during his tenure to twist federal energy policy and regulations to protect the dying U.S. coal industry from competition from cheaper, cleaner natural gas and renewable energy sources. While Perry's resignation was anticipated, it comes as he is increasingly entangled in President Trump's Ukraine quid pro quo scandal. Trump has nominated Deputy Energy Secretary Dan Brulette, a former Bush administration staffer turned lobbyist, for the post, yet another lobbyist in Trump's cabinet that's already bloated with lobbyists.
Oh, it's bloated with something.
Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg is in Canada, still leading Friday school strikes for climate, with thousands of school children demanding their government act on climate change with the speed and scope that science demands. On Friday, on the eve of parliamentary elections in Canada, Thunberg led a massive rally in Edmonton, Alberta, home of Canada's dirty and destructive tar sands industry.
We are not doing this because we want to. We aren't doing it because it's fun. We are doing this because our future is at stake. We are doing this because in this crisis, we will not be bystanders. And we are doing it because we want the people in power to unite behind the science.
That rally may have helped turn out youth voters. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party in Canada is projected to retain power, having overcome a tough challenge from Canada's Conservative Party, which wants to increase tar sands production.
Yeah, and it looks like it was a very, very close race, so a few votes here and there that Greta may have got out could have made the difference.
Finally, it's Big Oil's Big Tobacco moment. ExxonMobil goes on trial this week in New York State, where the oil giant is accused of misleading its investors by downplaying the potential costs of carbon emissions and climate change, a violation of state securities law. The lawsuit was triggered by a blockbuster investigation by nonprofit outlet Inside Climate News, which found that Exxon executives knew, at least since the 1970s, that burning their product would cause dangerous climate change. Exxon chose to mimic Big Tobacco's public disinformation campaign, spending over $30 million to fund climate science denying think tanks and researchers so it could continue profiting from its destructive business model.
And this is the point when Republicans really, really hope those judges they've packed the courts with come through for them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And while you're there, as GNR creeps up upon our 1,000th episode, please feel free to stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us keep going for another 1,000. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And we are officially into the third hour of the program. Thanks to everybody who's helped us finish fundraising for the month of October so that we can celebrate our Horniversary without even having to mention it. Thank you so very much indeed. there's a great little neologism. Leverywhere. That's from James in Illinois. And it gets a cowbell. Leverywhere. Makes you wonder if Parnas just liked proximity to power, or did he serve a particular purpose on the trail? Truman had a kind of a thuggish pal who was always there. Just looks funny, you think? Oh, yeah. Oh, I think he had a purpose. He was a bag man. He was part of an operation that allegedly funneled tens of thousands of dollars, or thousands and thousands of dirty dollars from a Russian oligarch into Republican campaign coffers, like, well, the Laxalt guy in Nevada and Pete Sessions in Texas. And then, lo and behold, he's swanning all around Florida with a guy of a similar mindset who only became governor through the determination of Nazis and Klansmen to back his campaign. Kind of hard to evade it, you know what I mean? All right, let's go and see if we got better audio with Scott than we had last night. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob. Are you there?
I'm here.
Am I any better today?
Much. You're just fine.
Oh, good. I love improvement, especially when it's mine, because it always comes as such a surprise, you know, that I would improve in any way, you know?
Happy outcomes without, for pessimists are especially pleasant.
Without that mantra, in every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. Oh, what a crock, you know? I guess that last part negates the earlier part. I don't know. Listen, pardon me. Wait a minute. Okay, I'll only keep you a moment or two. I watched The Laundromat last night on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch it again tonight. And I may watch it a third time in the wee small hours of the morning. Because there's a lot of stuff in there. It's an entertaining little film. But there's a lot of information crammed into like a 95-minute exercise in celluloid. So those with Netflix, do check that out. But after watching it, I thought back just a couple of short years to those long ago innocent times when the Panama Papers were a big thing.
Oh, the Panama Papers. Yes, of course.
And you know, being ever curious and having no memory, you know, retentive memory at all in some areas, I said, well, let's see what's on, Amazon Prime Video in the way of documentaries so I can have a refresher course so that when I revisit The Laundromat, the film, not the washing machine laden correct change only place, that I'll be more, prepared for the experience. So I found on Amazon Prime Video, I found three very similar titles with the words Panama Papers in them. And I must warn the Horn listeners who are going to look on Amazon Prime Video to avoid two of those titles. One of them was not well done at all. The other was not well done. No, actually, it was rather well done, but it was well done by RTV, Russia TV. So stay away from that one. The Panama Papers title that you want on Amazon Prime Video is the one directed by Alex Winter from 2018, and the voiceover provided for John Doe, the leaker, is Elijah Wood, the young actor. So that's the title that you want as your follow-up to The Laundromat. Or maybe watch Panama Papers first and then watch The Laundromat. Whichever way works for viewers out there, that's the way they should do it. But it was interesting in watching that Alex Winter documentary, Bob, about Panama Papers, some rather familiar names crop up in the papers.
Why am I not surprised?
Why indeed. Vladimir Putin's name comes up quite a number of times. Donald Trump's name, interestingly, comes up quite a number of times. The thing that I had forgotten about, if I ever knew it in the first place, was that batch of Panama Papers, millions and millions of pages, was the first document dump. There is apparently a second document dump. And I have a feeling, just a hunch, that it's being held back for more propitious times. Is that the correct usage of the word?
I would say it is.
More opportune moment. Because if what we know about Trump is he's a sleazebag in terms of, and I don't mean to insult all the legitimate sleazebags out there, but he, for lack of a better term, is a sleazebag when it comes to his business practices. Wouldn't you? Is there universal agreement on this, I would hope?
And all God's children said amen.
All right. So the purpose of these banks in Panama City and in other places around the globe, down in the Caribbean and, you know, other countries even, is to hide your money so that it doesn't get taxed. There's over $1 trillion, maybe several trillion dollars by now, worth of wealth that is untouched by the tax man, that this 1% of us, not us, shit, we're nowhere near that demo, which this 1%, this obscenely rich 1%, has never paid their fee for participation in the human race and in organized society, you know? And think of all the fucking good that could be done if the money were taxed at a reasonable rate, because you've got to kick in to the pot. No matter what game you're playing, if it's for stakes, you have got to kick something into the pot to make the game interesting and to give you a reason for playing. You can't just win for winning's sake. Winning must entail some kind of reward or something. But I'm catching myself preaching. But anyway, for those who have not watched The Laundromat on Netflix, do watch it and supplement your viewing with the Alex Winter, Elijah Wood effort, documentary-wise, on Amazon Prime Video, Panama Papers. So that's my dual TV viewing tip for tonight.
Sounds intriguing.
Hi back to Agnes. It's so rare that we get to hear her, that she deigns us. It's like the Emperor of Japan back in the old days. When that poor bastard had to, you know, sign the papers, you know, at the end of World War II, many citizens
we
of
must
Japan,
endure the unendurable, we must bear the unbearable.
But the thing about it is, no matter what he said, it would come as a shock, because they viewed him as a deity of sorts, if not a deity in fact. And that's kind of how I feel about Agnes, with those rare special moments when I hear her voice, and it's like I almost cringe and bow down and crunch up into a small foible-laden ball of humanity at her feet. Because she, yea, verily, and merrily, is the one. But you know this. I'm not telling you anything new.
Well, I mean, yeah.
But anyway, so I guess that's pretty much what I've got today, unless it has inspired a thought or two by you, because you remember the Pentagon Papers.
Sure. Well, I mean, I was kind of young for it, but I caught up.
Yeah. But there's There was nothing new in them, except for the
fact that what bothers me out of what you've described, and especially the notion that the second tranche that's a new. I don't know where tranche entered the vocabulary, but it did.
I think that's they also used that in talking about the housing mess, where they bundled all those mortgages.
That could be. But a second if there's a second tranche of Panama Papers, the idea that it's being held back for more for greater effect makes me think that there's probably some rat fucking involved, which means that there's probably some Democratic names in there that will be used, because I don't think a legitimate journalistic outfit would hold them back for political advantage. That's the kind of thing that rat fuckers do, and of course that term coming out of Watergate as well. And that's what Republicans do, is rat fuck.
Well, isn't there some good to be had if, you know, when the shit hits the fan, those standing nearest are going to be hit? But that always struck me as kind of a random effect. In holding back some of the documents, there may be names that we would prefer not to see among the names in the Pentagon Papers. Where am I? The Panama Papers. Okay. Well, there were names in the Pentagon Papers too, now that I think about it. But, you know, and in the long run, doesn't it do us some good that even some of the good guys can get caught up when they get too exuberant in their acquisitions? That's a nice way of putting the term greedy.
Avarice.
Yeah. Or am I being too practical?
Hey, I don't know. I mean, I'm so far removed from that mindset of people who spend all, who, you know, to quote, Wordsworth, who lay waste their days buying and selling, getting and spending. I'm so removed from all of that that I really can't contemplate that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So exuberance or over exuberance in that kind of a setting, I can't wrap my mind around it. And maybe that just means that I'm just, you know, entirely too much of a prole or a hick or something. But no.
Well, there may be something even in the Bible about this, but it seems to me there's a verse, or at least a sentiment expressed, about growing not weary in your good deeds or your good doing. Is that in the Bible anywhere?
Yeah.
Actually,
the other thing that's in the Bible, it's, you know, people misquote it all the time, saying money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil.
Oh, and there, a lot of these people, I mean, just literally, maybe not literally, but damn close to it, at least figuratively, just hump their piles of cash, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's the emotion that they tie into their wealth. They may not physically climb up on the pile of money and go to town, as it were, but their feeling, you know, the neurons that fire in their heads when they dwell on the very thought of all that dough, to quote Jimmy Durante, and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, all that dough under a big W. You know, something fires in their neurology.
It's probably related to the limbic system.
Yeah, it's probably that area in the brain that's the most primitive. I would be surprised if it weren't. And I mean, I've gone to the casinos every.
Can you imagine
when those bells go off and that money drops down through that slot? and the clinks and clanks and, you know, the sirens and the lights and everything. Something goes on in your head.
Sure.
And it may not be a huge amount of money. It may not be thousands and thousands.
But you
sometimes
won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the business of winning. And it could be 50 or 75 bucks. And you just go, whoa. You know, you're on top of the world. You're king shit, as it were.
Well,
you,
okay, but that being the case, let's think then about, hedge fund managers and those people who sit around some tower in lower Manhattan screaming, buy, 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 sell, 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 buy,
yeah,
sell, 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 buy, 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 sell, sell,
yeah.
Buy.
Yeah.
What kind of life is that? I guess
I
it's a great
it's
life
a
for some
one.
People.
It's a short one because when you... Stress is a cumulative thing, isn't it? Haven't they proved that in medicine?
Well, I know that there's good stress and bad stress.
Yeah, but see, that's...
I mean, what we've been in, what Agnes and I have been enduring, and certainly what Ferg has for the last month, or, well, 22 days now, is decidedly of the bad stress variety.
Yeah. And it's like piling on. When every door you try, there's either nothing worthwhile behind the door or it's locked to you when you're trying to dance with it and deal with it.
Well, I know it has been on our end, it's been maddening, and it was just, and last weekend was just so sad and grief stricken with what our daughter was going through. And, it was horrible. So sad. Agnes and I both just bawled like babies. And it just broke our hearts. Stress is not. Then you know. Then there's the good stress, like the performance based stress, the stress that comes from, you know, when the football players are standing in the tunnel and they're jumping up and down and they're just ready to go, and they're in the slips and that's the good stuff. Or the heightened energy that comes right before the lights go on and the curtain comes up for an actor.
Yeah.
Or the thrill in
radio, in my deal and your deal too.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. But
there was always a little thrill when you sat down, and you were 30 seconds out from cracking that mic, doing the ID, and launching into your shift. I know there was for me, even now thinking back at it.
We've crossed into 16 years of this, and every evening that's there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not nerves. It's not the, boom, I'm going to puke in a garbage can kind of nervous. No, it's your brain telling you this, that it's time to do what it is that you do, and you want to do the best you can at it. I imagine the same thing is there for surgeons. Nuclear physicists, people analyzing deep space astronomy.
Well, you know, I think you remember Jack Lemmon, the actor.
Yeah.
Brilliant actor. I don't think there's ever been a movie of his that I've seen that I didn't just love.
Captain, it is I, Ensign Pulver, and I just threw your stinking palm overboard.
He had a practice that he, from his earliest days in live television back in the 50s, before a scene, he would kind of whisper like half aloud under his breath, it's magic time. And boy, isn't that true.
Yeah, well, you know, there's an old ad out there from years and years gone by. And if I'm somewhere else in the house, or sometimes I catch a nap, a little bit before airtime, just so I'll be daisy fresh when we get started.
Yeah.
Agnes will come in and say, Bob, time to make the donuts.
Yeah.
Well, was that an old Dunkin' Donuts ad, time to make the donuts?
It was one of the, I think it may have been Dunkin' Donuts. It may have been. You know what, speaking of donuts, you know what I haven't had for a while?
A good Krispy Kreme.
Oh, yeah. There's not as many Krispy Kreme outlets here in San Diego as there were. And
they overexpanded.
Well, yeah, I know. But, God, there's nothing like, I don't mean to do food porn. Well, yes, I do. There's nothing at all like those original Krispy Kremes, hot and fresh. But my second favorite one is the cake donut with the little cap of milk chocolate icing on top.
Oh, okay.
Not completely dipped in chocolate.
No. Our Krispy Kreme here, it's their traditional yeast-raised donut that's covered in a chocolate icing, because that Krispy Kreme chocolate icing is unlike any other, and it's heavenly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so we get them, and honest to God, it's like 4 seconds for one in the microwave. And it tastes it tastes like you just got it with the hot now sign, because that's truly
paradise.
Well,
we used to have them in the store, in the Albertsons grocery store, boxed up, half a dozen in a box.
Yeah, we do too. I mean, I got them at Kroger's.
Yeah, but
I've never been able to sell myself on the cream filled ones. They just gross me out.
Well, there is one that I used to like. It was like almost like an eclair.
Yeah, more like a custard than that white fluff.
Yeah, fuck the white fluff. I'm not interested in that. But yeah, that custard stuff. And I grew up with.
And of course, I love the raspberry and the lemon filled ones.
Ooh, the lemon.
But man, if you microwave that thing too long, that filling becomes hotter than any lava coming out of any volcano on Earth in a hurry.
From the center of the earth.
I have blistered the roof of my mouth on that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, mercy.
And David in South Carolina, Stan, reminded me, Krispy Kreme in Alabama does home deliveries in select places.
Oh, God, we need that out here. Man, they would find me in a pile of empty dozen donut boxes with chirps sniffing around, figuring, what the hell happened to the poor guys in a sugar coma here? The Med Alert folks would come in and find me, and that would be that. Just buried in empty boxes with that Krispy Kreme glaze, a circle around my mouth.
I know, and when you walk into when they're making them and the hot now sign's on, and those fresh donuts are popping up out of the fat and coming down that conveyor belt, and they go through that enrobing curtain of just pure liquid sugar heaven, and each one is covered. Oh,
and I want to climb up on that thing. If I wasn't going to get third degree burns from the molten icing, I would risk climbing up on the conveyor and running my. Now, the hot grease wouldn't be too much fun, but man, that curtain of icing might be. Find a date. Let's try something new. But anyway.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Well, this unpaid product placement for Krispy Kreme. Brought to you by Scott in San Diego.
Well, yeah.
Because, see, I can never get the hot nows. It's very rare I can get the hot nows, because you have to be the nearest Krispy Kreme to me is 60 miles away in South Charleston, and I have to be there before 11 o'clock, because they turn off the hot now sign at 11 o'clock.
Well, I think there's an app for that. In these areas where there are lots of Krispy Kremes, or at least more than a few, there's an app that your phone will start vibrating and jiggling and dancing across the table when the hot now is on. We're like Pavlo's dog, you know? Or in my case, Pavlo's cat.
Oh, and it's always good to see that my recommendations are taken up. I just got a note from Lady B. Subject line, Charles the Bad. Charles of Navarre.
I wanted to hear how that turned out.
Raise your hand if you're a nurse assistant who would like to retire soon and live the rest of your life in luxury in the Cayman Islands. There are some bad ends out there. But, Caesar, there were, 44 stab wounds or something like that? I forget how many. And he was the topic of the world's first known of autopsy, And the Egyptian physician said that he would have survived all of them save for the one that was put right through his heart. So, I mean, there are bad ways to go. John Kennedy had a very bad day.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just if you want, I mean, just look up Charles the Bad. Charles of Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E. I hesitate to go into the details of it because it's kind of gory, but he was such an awful, awful human being. And when it came, the universe made sure that he went out as awfully as he lived. That's all I'll say.
Well, that'll be my assignment this evening before I rewatch The Laundromat.
And if you ever read Barbara Tuchman's magnificent history of the 14th century called A Distant Mirror, he figures in that significantly.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of the best histories that I've ever read. And she was one of the best storytellers of history. She wrote it after she wrote The Guns of August, because all of a sudden she realized that the 20th century and the 14th century had a hell of a lot in common.
And I think Guns of August was one of the books that JFK wrote, or not wrote, but read, that sort of turned him in his thinking toward détente, or at least better relationship with the Soviet Union. Back in the day, one of the things that got him killed, he was looking at not proceeding down the path of madness into Vietnam after the 64 election, should he have been reelected. And I believe that was one of the books. And speaking of books, and I haven't mentioned it for a while, but November is around the corner, and I always observe the 22nd as a sad day in my life and in America's life. But if you, those interested in what John Kennedy was up to and what got him killed, a gentleman by the name of James Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S, wrote a book about 8 or 10 years ago called JFK and the Unspeakable. If you read no other book on the topic of President Kennedy's demise, JFK and the Unspeakable will inform you pretty much to the degree you need to be. It doesn't deal with the assassination per se, the who shot from where and how many shots and was it a lone nut and all that. It doesn't really deal in that with that angle. It deals with what got him killed, basically. It was so much of a threat to Wall Street and to the military industrial crowd and to the warmongers and to just anybody who were his opposite number in American political and power elite life. Okay, but yeah, you can't go wrong with that book, JFK and the Unspeakable.
I remember
what
that.
Was that?
I remember that.
What was that Tuchman book?
Oh, A Distant Mirror.
Yeah, that rings a faint bell. I must read
it's
that.
It's a big one. It's a long read, but it is well worth it. Her research is downright microscopic, and she completely captures medieval life, not only among the wealthy, but among the struggling peasant class. And, well, okay, my suggestion is having some impact. I just got a note from Ralphs. OMG, I just read how Charles of Navarre died. Wow. I have a feeling there will be a lot of... If this was a much, much bigger program than it is, we might see Charles of Navarre trending on social media by tomorrow.
What, just without going into the gory details,
nope.
What about him caused such outrage on the part of those who inflicted that demise? I mean,
No one inflicted the demise on him. That's the thing. It was just justice. It just worked out that way. But he was a horrible human being. He had designs on being much more than he was, and so he was constantly plotting and engaging in machinations. One minute he would be on the side of the English, and another minute he'd be on the side of the French, and then he'd be, you know, fostering rebellion in the low countries, and he was just horrible, horrible.
No, was he a French king or a British English king?
He was neither. He was Charles of Navarre.
Oh, no, well, where the hell's Navarre?
I'm pretty sure
this show more often than not serves to remind me of the wealth of stuff I don't know. I know a lot of stuff, but there are some areas where I am quite deficient. Thank you. That's one of the areas.
Navarre is more or less on the northern end of the Iberian Peninsula, at least partially, I think entirely in the mountainous area of the Pyrenees. Northern Spain.
Yeah, okay.
And it was a Basque kingdom in the Middle Ages. It is to the if you know where Bilbao is on the Iberian Peninsula, it is to the east of Bilbao.
Okay.
And sort of southwest of Toulouse in France. The capital of Navarre is Pamplona, okay? The running of the bulls,
okay.
And all of that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And in the Middle Ages, all of those things were going concerns, all these petty kingdoms were of vast importance. And so with a little petty kingdom like that, he could make a massive amount of mischief. And along the way, you know, he was also related, because they were all related.
Yeah.
He had lands in Normandy. He had lands in Champagne. No, he didn't. But he was a hot mess. You know, he had, you know, murder for hire, had people killed. He was part of the slaughter of the Jacquerie when they rose up in Paris. Involved in the Spanish Wars. Just a horrible human being. And he died at the age of 54 in Pamplona.
Well, I'm definitely going to look him up. And I'm also going to look and see, has any of his story ever been captured in film?
I don't know if it has or not.
Documentary form?
I don't know if he has.
Who would his contemporaries have been? Who was in England?
Edward the Third of England.
Okay.
I think this is at a time when the crazy was really catching up with the deeply inbred French line. Here, good. I'm just going to do it. There are two accounts.
Oh God! Here you go. Have we opened a can of something here? Bob?
Well, I mean. I find the end of Charles of Navarre satisfying to contemplate when I think about people who richly deserve it. Charles the Bad, having fallen into such a state of decay that he could not make use of his limbs, consulted his physician, who ordered him to be wrapped up from head to foot in a linen cloth impregnated with brandy, so that he might be enclosed in it to the very neck as in a sack, It was night when this remedy was administered. You know, and if you rub somebody down with alcohol, it opens the pores. You know what I'm saying? So, brandy.
Yeah.
It was night when this remedy was administered. One of the female attendants of the palace charged to sew up the cloth that contained the patient, having come to the neck, the fixed point where she was to finish her seam, made a knot according to custom, but as there was still remaining an end of thread, instead of cutting it as usual with scissors, she had the recourse to the candle, which immediately set fire to the whole cloth. Being terrified, she ran away and abandoned the king, who was thus burnt alive in his own palace.
Oh, my God.
And another account says, he was now 60 years of age and a mass of disease from the viciousness of his habits. To maintain his warmth, his physician ordered him to be swathed in linen, steeped in spirits of wine, and his bed to be warmed by a pan of hot coals. He had enjoyed the benefit of this singular prescription sometime in safety, but now as he was perpetrating his barbarities on the representatives of his kingdom, quote, by the pleasure of God or of the devil, says Froissart, who was the principal historian of the era, quote, the fire caught to his sheets, and from that to his person, swathed as it was in matter highly inflammable. He was fearfully burnt, but lingered nearly a fortnight in the most terrible agonies. It's that lingered a fortnight, you know, fortnight's 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 long weeks in that instance.
2 weeks with third-degree burns over the entirety of his body.
Mercy.
And so sometimes when I think about horrible, vile, evil, nasty people, I think, you know, the universe does catch up.
But he was already racked with disease.
Yeah.
So to have added that level of misery to his situation, I mean, you kind of have to tip the old rabbit ears to the goddess of irony or whoever's in charge of such things, you know? Gee.
And yet one of his daughters would go on to be the wife of Henry IV of England, who usurped one of the Richards. And then on the other hand, he had a son, Charles III of Navarre, who turned out to be not such a bad guy. Yeah, maybe because he saw what a rotten human being his daddy had been.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I take a certain grim satisfaction in thinking, you know. And it's when you see things like a mass of disease from the viciousness of his habits.
Yeah.
And I think about spirochetes and things like that.
Oh, yeah. And earlier you were talking about, I think you mentioned Reagan, you know, kind of walking around in a perpetual fog there toward the last 10 or 15 years of his life. And the same thing happening to Trump, but not wanting that because he wouldn't be aware. I think on some level, even in that state, people are aware, if only in the sense of being able to compare the quality of things for them now versus back when they were riding high, you know?
Yeah.
And especially if you lose, you know, the capacity of speech, you know, the ability to speak or ambulate or whatever, that just adds to the misery because there's nothing, they're stuck. There's nothing they can do about it.
It is a reminder to the American people. If people want to holler ageism, I guess I can't stop them, but this is just a fact. It is a reminder to we, the people of the United States, that Ronald Reagan, who had never been much of a hellraiser, not a big one for drinking and carrying on, and I think he smoked for a while, But Ronald Reagan, who had lived a fairly vigorous life, lots of exercise and horseback riding and stuff like that, Ronald Reagan, with his mind already leaving his body, exited the White House younger than two of the three principal presidential candidates in the Democratic field will be when if they enter the White House.
Yeah.
Now, and I don't mean to enrage people when I mention that, because those are just mathematical facts. And I don't know how you don't take that into account.
Well, Nate, I don't think I've ever made it a secret that I prefer Bernie. And after watching his rally this past weekend and watching that nice endorsement, you know, I mean, that guy, for whatever health issue he may have had, see, now there's a difference between people who have health issues of that sort and don't change anything. It doesn't get their attention. It doesn't better them. Okay? He may never have another.
Well, the problem for Bernie is that there's not much for him to change. It's not like he was out there living a debauched life to begin with.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
he's not
sitting there eating bacon sandwiches every day of his life and having a half a pack of Marlboro Reds for and a pot of coffee for dessert.
Well, what I'm saying is he may never have another heart-related episode or anything of significance that could befall him for the next 20 years.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, is that because he had the heart attack and because they did the stenting procedure, people who get that done say they feel better almost immediately because, and I remember my father talking about it, he got his femoral arteries opened up. And he said all of a sudden his feet were warm for the first time in years.
Well, God, look at Cheney. I mean, if you must, but look at Cheney. How many fucking things he
has. Now, there's a Charles of Navarre guy for you.
Well, we can but hope, Bob. We can but hope. You know, and Larry King, for Christ's sake. That poor bastard, back when he was on the radio overnights on Mutual,
Be-doop.
That guy would smoke four packs of cigarettes a night, or during at least the course of his day, and his heart attacked him. And he apparently had very good doctors who patched him up and did what was necessary, but they also were good enough to set him down and say, Larry, you have got to start taking care of yourself, son. And I forget his age. He couldn't have been more than very late 40s or early 50s when this happened, because it's been some years ago. And, I mean, he's not a picture of beauty today.
Right, and see, the other thing you have to understand about Bernie's situation is that you may bet your ass that they went all over his circulatory system looking for any potential trouble spots.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they found one, and they fixed it. They found what caused the heart attack, and they fixed it. And if he eats right and exercises and all of that stuff, and doesn't run with the wrong crowd and smoke unfiltered Camels and whatnot, inhale Philly's blunt cigars, he may live to be 100. I mean, bless his heart. Jimmy Carter just fractured a hip.
I saw that today. I'm trying
to finish this up, this thought.
Okay, all right.
Bernie may be in better shape for having had the heart attack, depending on how much damage was done. He may have been in better shape for having had the heart attack than he would have been had he just continued toddling along.
Yeah.
But my larger point is that you do have to take these things into account. Because even if you've got a body in really, really good shape like Reagan did, I mean, I despise him, old Ronald, the old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, but he took care of his body, but that didn't protect him from being abandoned by his mind.
Well, there's always, it's like, you know, with matters of health, it's always a crapshoot with all of us. You know, there's genetic predisposition, there's environment, there's mindset, there's our habits or non-habits, all of that stuff. The thing that attracts me to Bernie, getting back to him specifically, is, and this is not to take anything away from any other candidate, it's just that with him, I know precisely what I'm in for. I like his ideas. I like his plans and his pledges and his programs. Now, will he do everything that, will he be able to do it? Well, I don't know. We all go into a position of strength or power with a wish list. Things that we would like to see happen. Things that there is a consensus. And when you take each of the individual items on his to-do list and work polls, a high number of Americans buy into the ideas that Bernie presents on an individual basis. And yet there are people who say, well, no, Biden will be our best bet, or Elizabeth Warren, or Mayor Pete, or Mr. Yang and his $1,000 a month to everybody in America, or whomever. I'm going to go with the dance with the one who brung me until that partner is not a viable option for me. And then I will choose among any number who are left and decide on that basis. But I'll use Bernie as the template. In my mind, it'll be, how do they measure up to what he was up to? And, you know, also the matter of electability and how they will. See, I would love to see Bernie and Trump together on a stage. I really think that Trump would be enough of a prick that he would sit out the debates. Now, I know people don't believe me when I say that, that he never misses an opportunity
I'm going to pretty much stick to my policy of not trashing any candidates. But I got to say that finding out that Pete Buttigieg takes advice from Mark Zuckerberg, I found deeply disturbing. I will vote for whomever is the nominee. And I have to be realistic enough to recognize that with my primary not coming around till, you know, middle of May.
Yeah, it's the moot point anyway.
Everybody else going to make my choice for me. Because if there's more than three candidates, if there are two candidates who are both equally viable in May, I will be surprised. So I need people in the early voting states to figure things out. I have a horrible, bad feeling about Joe Biden. It's not even policy driven. I see 2016 redux all over Joe Biden.
Do you think he'll drop out before things get going, or?
I hate to say I hope so, but I hope so.
I think his funding has been on the wane. If I read that, there was something the other day that I heard alluded to in terms of his funding, and he's nowhere near as well off in terms of money raising. And see, that's the key. That's the sad fact of political life in this country. Without the money, you don't have a prayer to begin with, you know? And you know Trump is raking it in, hand over fist. I told you I'm reading that book, R.I.P. GOP.
Yeah.
It's got too many charts and graphs in it. I don't, you know, I would rather read an explanation of what's going on. I can pick it up, you know, but I don't like graphs and things. But so far, it's been a thoroughly depressing book because he hasn't gotten to the good part yet.
You mean where the GOP drops dead?
Well, no, he's giving a pretty expansive history of how we got to where we are now. And I'm, you know, with every page that I turn, I'm thinking, I know this, I know all this, and I appreciate the refresher course, but I want to see the good parts, you know? It's like, you know, the Terry Southern novel Candy that I read way before.
Yeah, get me to the part where Charles of Navarre gets in bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get me to the brandy and gauze part.
Yeah, the needle and thread lady. And the books will, you know, I know my copy of my paperback of Candy, that it would always open up to the part with the gardener or the part with, I don't know, it's been too many years. But, yeah, so I'm hoping that, I forget the author's name, I'm hoping that I can get to the good part soon in this book because it's given me a sad, Bob. It's given me a real sad. So, I don't know. Every time I try to make my calls short, I get off on these tangents, and you encourage
me.
Well,
we're professional conversationalists.
You know? Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. Some days it's overwhelming when you try, and I pity you. I mean, God, I would hate to have, but yeah, there's stuff probably in your head that it's a wonder you can sleep at night knowing what you know about the state of things. Because I don't think that you probably touch on some aspects of it because you don't want us to lose heart out here in Radio Land. You know, sometimes it's better not to tell everything that you know.
Well, one thing I need to do, and I might actually dedicate part of tomorrow to it. Maybe everybody will have read the 15 pages of William Taylor's opening statement, but I was actually thinking about reading it as a recording and just putting it out there so that people could listen to it, kind of the way was done with the Mueller report.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because these things are dense and they are carefully crafted by lawyers. So I may do it on the program tomorrow and then maybe cut it out and put it up to SoundCloud and shit like that, just so people can wrap their heads around it, because I've scanned it during the course of the program a little bit, and this is some pretty damning stuff.
Well, I mean, there is going to be more of that.
Well, yeah, and there's a story that I didn't get to today, and it has to do with, let's put it this way, Marvel Comics movies and things like that are terribly, terribly popular, and some, you know, they make bajillions of dollars, but when you spend money on a Marvel Universe product.
Mm-hmm.
You're supporting a guy named Ike Perlmutter. And Ike Perlmutter has given more money to Donald Trump than just about anybody else. So when you go to a Marvel Comics movie, you're supporting Donald Trump. But what is really sleazy and grifty about this is what he gets for his money. And I'm not, there's no time to go into the depth of it. But Ike Perlmutter despises the VA, and he wants it privatized. That should be enough to give you an idea of what this nasty little field of grift and graft is.
Yeah, because that helps nobody except that's cronyism.
Oh, it's cronyism. It's arguably illegalism. But anyway, I'm going to wrap things up here. We ran a half hour long last night, but I'm going to wrap things up here this evening. And well, we'll be back for prayer meeting Wednesday. It's been a good conversation, as it always is, Scott.
And I will look up more about Charles, because I'm sure that there's stuff that you have left out for the diners among us.
Oh, just the Wikipedia entry. I mean, he was a player of his time.
Yeah. Is there a woodcut showing what he might have looked like?
There are medieval illumination type portraits. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any resemblance to Trump or any modern? Because I believe in a certain bit of reincarnation, that the tormented souls come back in a new host carries them about to wreak havoc across the land. You know, I don't know who Trump was in an earlier life, but I wouldn't. I would have liked that.
I'm guessing he'll come if he's gonna. If there's any reincarnation involved, he'll come back as a trichina worm or. One of those noxious little things that slither into the skin of your feet out of the mud, in some godforsaken jungle.
You were doing fine until then.
It happened.
Anyway, thank you, Bob.
Scott, have a good night, man.
Take care. I'll see you.
Bye. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Thanks, everybody. Thank you very kindly for all you did to finish fundraising. Thank you so much. And I have an announcement here, courtesy of Jude, just to wrap things up. Jude is headed down to El Paso to do a women's standing stand, a stand for peace, at the detention centers. And if you feel so motivated, Jude would be honored, just first names only. You can send an email to me. I'll send the first names to Jude, and you'll be included in her stand with your name written on parchment, enclosed by ribbon and flowers, to draw attention to the torment of the children who continue to be held in Trump's concentration camps, not just at the border, but all around the country. Jude brings a great deal of moral courage to her activities, and she invited anyone who would like to be included to do this, and she will happily do so. So just let me know via email. Note coming in from Suman. Mayor Pete and Mark Zuckerberg. What's wrong with Mayor Pete and Facebook, Bob? That platform is where this election will be fought. Don't you think Democrats should get into the same filthy mud that Republicans are in to actually fight them? Taking the high road hasn't worked so well for us so far. I'm not arguing for the mayor, but I'm in support of getting fully prepared to contest the election on any platform. I support that as well. It is Zuckerberg himself calling shots and telling Mayor Pete who to hire and having two of them picked up that causes me some concern. Because I have no doubt whatsoever in saying that I don't think Mark Zuckerberg has anything even remotely resembling the best interests of the country at heart. Mark Zuckerberg has Mark Zuckerberg's best interests at heart. And he does nothing that does not inure to the benefit of Mark Zuckerberg. And I don't, depending on how things play out, I'm all for getting down there and popping them in the mouth and bloodying their noses and fighting with them toe to toe. I'm all for that. but I am disturbed that someone who preaches a semi-progressive message has associations like that. But there are other candidates with other associations that I also find disturbing. And if Mayor Pete is the nominee, I'm voting for Mayor Pete. If Bernie's the nominee, I'm voting for Bernie. If Uncle Joe's the nominee, I'm voting for Uncle Joe. Etc., etc., all the way down to Old Yeller Dog. Count me a vote for Old Yeller Dog. Thank you, Darlene. I'll pass your name along. Ron in Raleigh says, Ike Perlmutter has been cast aside. Kevin Feige has taken over all the Marvel products. Perlmutter is still at Disney, but he has an office and no power. He is still being listed in the news articles that I'm reading, particularly an article by ProPublica, as Marvel Entertainment Chairman Ike Perlmutter. But it also goes back into the misty depths of time as far as the Trump regime is concerned. You know, that 300 years ago that was only not quite 3 years ago. So anyway, thanks to... yeah, that's true. James in Illinois points out McCain had money problems too during the primary. Indeed. Jim also recommends Barbara Tuchman's The Proud Tower. Yeah, she didn't write anything bad. You can read the entire Barbara Tuchman library and be by far the better for it. Thank you to all of you who keep this program on the air with your kind contributions, both as subscribers and a la carte through the course of a month. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And I love you, son. Later.